Come Again, Sexuality and Orgasm, my science-based, solution-driven audio series that addresses the biological, hormonal, and medical reasons for loss of libido, pain with sexual activity, and difficulty with orgasm, is now available on demand on drstryker.com. There are 30 episodes intended for all women, people who care about women, and healthcare professionals that take care of women. I'm excited to offer this series. I promise you, unlike your vagina, it's not dry. And healthcare professionals have the option of purchasing supplementary material, including 6 videos that go through the details of taking a sexual history and how to do a targeted physical exam in women with dyspareunia and orgasmic dysfunction. In addition, the healthcare professional version includes scientific articles, screening forms, and much more. Basically, everything needed to incorporate sexual medicine into a practice. For more information for both healthcare professionals and non-healthcare professionals, go to drstryker.com/comeagain. Dr. Jen Ashton, you know her as the chief medical correspondent for ABC News and Good Morning America, who appeared in your home every morning explaining the hot topics in health. Today, we're talking about her pivot into her real passion, fitness and wellness for all women. And Dr. Ashton has designed a program that challenges our culture's predisposed notions of aging and changes the narrative of what a woman in her 60s, 70s, or 80s looks, feels, and acts like. I'm Dr. Lauren Stryker, a gynecologist, best-selling author, and a nationally recognized menopause expert. When it comes to menopause, midlife, and what comes after, I'm betting you've not gotten a lot of information from your own doctor. If women are given good information, they'll make good choices, and I'm here to give you the inside information. So welcome, Jen.
Good to be with you, Lauren. And I have to say, your voice for well over a decade, if I lived in Chicago, and this is not a threat, you'd be a doctor.
But we'd be friends if you lived in Chicago.
For sure. You're amazing. And you've been a real voice of clarity and sanity over the last decade.
Well, right back at you. And, you know, you probably don't remember this, but you know, we met in Austin, Texas. It was almost 10 years ago. And we were participating in an event called, believe it or not, the Reinvention Convention. And the whole theme of the event was to reframe the narrative on aging and how to maximize wellness. And it was kind of a foreshadowing of what you're doing now. So, okay, just to start with, talk about your reinvention, what led up to it. And I want to hear about your personal journey from nationally acclaimed TV anchor to wellness expert.
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, you and I have a very similar background, board certified OBGYN, have dedicated the last 25 years to taking care of women. I used to hate the term women's health, but just it is what it is. That is the description of what we do. We take care of the whole woman. And about, you know, my second year out of residency, a network television career fell on me. It was never anything I wanted to do. I was very content, you know, doing surgery and delivering babies and being a mom.
I just have to interrupt you for 1 second because that's exactly what I wanted to do. And I was so jealous when you landed that position. And I just thought, oh, that's what I want to do. Listen, so you didn't want to do it.
I did not want to do it. So but I found that I not only had a real passion for communicating medical information, but according to the network executives, I also had a skill and a talent at doing it. So it literally started a second full-time career that I did for almost 20 years in parallel with having my own practice and seeing women and teenage girls, you know, of all ages. And I was at ABC News, which is the number one network in the country, for 12 years. I was their chief medical correspondent for almost 8 years of that time and co-hosted the third hour of Good Morning America for 4 years. And I really felt, to be honest with you, not challenged anymore because we had gotten through the pandemic, which probably aged me 10 years. My last at working at ABC News, I was on the air 846 times in 1 year. And what I found, Lauren, and I know this is going to resonate with you, is that, you know, my job at the network was to talk about the biggest medical story of the day, every single day. And for almost 20 years, I loved that because it kept me very current in all aspects of medicine that ordinarily you and I as OBGYNs wouldn't really have the time or the desire to kind of familiarize ourselves with, but it was quite literally my job. And I loved that. And it made me a better doctor. And being on the air while I had a medical practice, being a real doctor made me better on the air. But after, you know, 12 years at ABC, what I realized was I could talk about COVID or salmonella or, you know, cognitive decline or whatever. But what I really want to talk about is women's health, obesity medicine, and nutrition. And that's what I'm credentialed in. That's what my expertise is in. And that's really where I wanted to focus. And it just so happened that it happened at literally the same time that not just the United States, but the world finally woke up and said, oh my gosh, you know, 2/3 of us have overweight and obesity, and half of us are, and there's 1.4 million women going into menopause in the US every year. Maybe we should start talking about this. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is like a sign, it's meant to be. And I stepped away from a very significant, very lucrative 4-year return offer from ABC, left on very good terms. They'll always be my, you know, my TV family, but I couldn't be more content with finally able to devote all my bandwidth to this space.
No, I think the other piece of this, and granted, I was not, you know, on Good Morning America, but I do the news in Chicago, the WGN morning news. And like you, it's general news. And it did make me a better doctor, made me keep up with things because I was had to give the headline of the day. But the unsatisfying part of this is that I have, you know, like most segments, it's about between 3 and 4 minutes. And I would have to hit 3 topics, which meant it was about, you know, 3 sentences on each topic. And it's really not very satisfying because what you're doing now is making an enormous difference in individual lives because you're not just giving them a bite of something, you're giving them the whole apple. You know, you're telling them this is what you need to know and this is what you can do to really affect change. And that's really a gift to be able to do that. So I'm happy for you because this pivot sounds like it is really going to enrich your life in so many ways. And it's not like you're not communicating with people anymore. You are, you're just in a different way. You know, all those skills.
Exactly. Right. And you nailed it, which is that, you know, on network television, we have even less time. You know, a long segment on Good Morning America would be 2 minutes. And I called it a long run for a short slide. And it doesn't leave people really more informed. I mean, I felt that it was challenging and semi-impactful, but compared to, you know, when I left, I launched a free weekly newsletter called Join Agenda, like but I didn't think of that name, by the way. And it is incredibly popular. It has hundreds of thousands of subscribers, all women. Well, I guess a couple of men. And I write it myself every week. And I absolutely love that. And, you know, that's just the tip of the iceberg. But, you know, like you, look, doctors are generally poor communicators. So
I think,
you know, to be able to take a headline, distill it down to the 3 most important facts in, you know, 1 minute or 2 minutes or 3 minutes is important. And it's a skill. But ultimately, to really move the needle and to speak directly to women about things like weight and hormones, I need much more real estate, as they say.
You know, I used to do media training and particularly for doctors at the hospital. And I would tell them, they all had dreams, of course, of having your job. And I would tell them, you know what? This isn't just about doing media. This is about communicating, whether it's with your patient, talking to students, giving lectures. You and I can tell in a nanosecond when you hear a lecture or when you hear a doctor explaining a diagnosis and treatment plan to a patient, if that person is a good communicator and if that person can do TV. I mean, that's the other thing too. Right. You know, it's a skill set. And while you said it was natural to you, and you and I both know that it's a skill set, you know, it comes more naturally to some than others, but it is also something to be learned. All right, let's go back to that reinvention Austin event that we did, the reinvention panel, because I went back and I pulled up the folder, you know, I saved stuff.
Oh my gosh.
You know, and I know, and I didn't even really honestly remember that whole thing very much. And I certainly did not remember the questions, but are you game for it? I'm going to ask you the questions that you were asked at that panel.
Let's do it.
Okay, let's do it. Because they're kind of actually interesting. All right. So the first question that we were asked on the reinvention panel was, and I'm quoting directly, "Let's be honest, not all women over the age of 60 love their age. What are the key traits of women who do love their age?"
Well, obviously now that 56, my personal perspective for this topic is changing a little bit. I assume it's changing. But I would say that's kind of an easy question for me to answer, because the women that I know, whether they're friends or relatives or, you know, patients, former patients that are in their 60s, 70s and beyond, who are not bothered by their age, are uniformly those women who have a purpose in life and who have, you know, something that gives them satisfaction, intrigue, joy, pleasure even, and, you know, they're not the same thing, and really a purpose. So whether that's volunteering or still a vibrant career, of which I know many, many women in their 60s, 70s, and 80s who are still not just working, but killing it in their careers, or their families in a way that doesn't become creepy or cringy. It's just like, you know, they're full, they're complete. And I think the reason that's why they don't spend a lot of time thinking about the negatives associated with age is because they've replaced something that is gone, like youth, with something that is just as, if not more, exciting and fulfilling and positive. And so I think that, you know, that's really the key. And I will tell you, and no one knows this, by the way, Lauren.
A lot of people are about to know this.
I know. I'm not breaking any ground with this, but for me, this is a big deal. And it's not something I've talked about publicly yet, but I just started learning Mahjong. And the reason, and I know it's like very, everyone's learning it and it's like everything old is new again, but the reason that I'm learning it is because I want to be very intentional about the next 40 years of my life. And I want to know something that's intellectual and social and fun that I can do with people of all ages, anywhere. And it doesn't require, you know, if God forbid I can't walk one day, I can still hopefully play Mahjong. And so I think that kind of learning something new, doing something engaging, planning, you know, we're as doctors or, you know, any one of your listeners who's a type A person, and I'm like a type A with a capital A, like we're planners. So I'm planning for the next half of my life. And Mahjong is part of that.
I was so sure that you were going to say, and I'm taking up pickleball.
No, golf.
You know, golf. You know, I'm embracing physical. My age by pickleball. Okay. Another reinvention panel question. For women who don't love their age, what things do we need to accept about aging and what shouldn't we accept?
You know, what I've said many, many times in my newsletter, in my books, on the air, aging is a privilege reserved for those who are still alive. And I honestly don't mean it to sound flip or sassy. I mean it, right? Mm-hmm. When people say alternative, that is the truth. And you and I, as doctors, have heard of and seen a lot of tragic, premature endings to women's lives.
Yeah.
And you think of the things that so many of us waste time thinking about or worrying about or being upset about when, you know, you imagine those people who are no longer with us, they'd give anything to switch places with us. And so I really try to encourage people, and I try to do this myself, to really keep that in the forefront of my mental, like, radar, because it, you know, going into menopause is a privilege, because the alternative is you're dead.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, because when I was a few years back, I was volunteering in Africa, very, very remote Kenya. And when I got there, I told my Maasai translator, I'm very eager to talk to women about menopause because I want to see what are their attitudes, what do they do about it, what do they experience. And she looked at me like I was the stupidest person on earth and said, the life expectancy here is 28. If someone gets to menopause, they're just thrilled to still be alive. And it really does change your perspective when you think of it that way.
I mean, that literally brings tears to my eyes, because you just, you know, and then I think hopefully we can talk about this a little bit, but I actually think that's one of the negative consequences of the whole menopause movement right now, is it fails to recognize, you know, the gratitude part of it. It yeah. makes it all such a, you know, negative thing, like, you know, we've been kept in the dark, and we've, you know, this is tragic that we're gaining weight around the midsection. You know what? I'd take the 5 pounds I have around mm-hmm. my midsection. And
that's what Spanx is for, yeah. you know?
Exactly.
You know, okay. So there were a bunch of questions for me about sexuality in the 60s and 70s, and I'm going to spare you. But there was one other thing about that event that I totally forgot about until I went back and looked at my folder. The host of the whole convention, of the reinvention convention, was Joan London. And she was a GMA anchor, but evidently, and I didn't know this until I looked this up, she evidently was asked to leave when she was in her 40s. And publicly, she said it was to spend more time with her kids. But now she is out there saying, no, she was forced out. She was told she was too old to anchor a show. She was in her 40s. And, you know, when you think about this, it wasn't just ageism, it was also sexism. I mean, Walter Cronkite, he anchored until he was 64 and continued to appear on air until his 90s. So what do you think? Do you think that would happen today? Is there still that double standard between men and women when it comes to aging in general, and then specifically in the media?
Well, obviously I have had a ringside seat for the inner workings and the behind the scenes yeah. working of media for 20 years. And I will say now that in my opinion, no, I do not think that would happen today, and I'll tell you why. We have titans of entertainment and media industry who are on the air, not just at ABC, but other networks too, every single day. And I'm going to run through a couple of, like, I think household names. Barbara Walters, until she died, was in her late 80s, okay? Joy Behar is 80, okay? This at ABC alone. At CBS, Gail King, 70 years old. Whenever Oprah does her specials, Oprah. Maria Shriver is 70 years old. And this is just in television, by the way. Yeah. Then you do politics, entertainment, you know, Fortune 500 companies, CEOs that are, you know, leading countries, leading companies. Dame Helen Mirren.
I love, like, her, yeah.
Like, look at these women, right? And they're not slowing down.
No.
They are slowing down. And I think the other reason that wouldn't happen today is because the viewing audience demographic is older today than it was before. And business people now realize that women over 50 have resources to spend. Oh, what a shocker.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny that you should say that, because when I would, like, pitch producers, because that's what I would do when I was doing segments on, you know, the occasional GMA or Today Show or whatever. And back then I was pitching menopause all the time. And they said, no, No, the sponsors don't want that. It's too old. It's too old. You got to go younger. Right. Let's talk about, you know, sex. Let's talk about birth control pills if you want, but we're not talking about menopause. And boy, has that changed to your point.
Yeah. Now they know that's all they want to talk about because they know that will pull things. And they know that, again, women 50 and over have lived experience. They have an entire life of resources, financial flexibility to spend money and put their dollars where their interests are. And, you know, they hopefully the people in their 30s and 25 and over, which used to be the target demo, are working. They're not at home as much.
That's right.
It has changed. And I think that's a really, really good thing.
It's a really, really good change. And sadly, it does have a little bit to do with follow the money. You know, let's give programming that the people who spend the money are going to want, but that's okay. We'll take it.
Totally.
We'll take it. All right. Let's talk about your wellness experiment. And first of all, just what is it and what motivated you to start it? And then I want to get into some of the specifics.
Oh, I'm so happy you asked about it, Lauren. So, you know, first of all, it's called the Wellness Experiment, and people can look at joinagenda.com to see and read about it and learn about it. It started as a total accident, just like my television career. I see a trend. And it started because when I stepped away from my position at ABC News, I was 55 years old. I had just gotten remarried 2 years before. My husband works and splits his time between Los Angeles and Boston and New York. And I wanted to be able to not only do whatever I do for women and women's health wherever I am, but I wanted to finally take a minute to take care of myself. And whether you're a woman who works outside the home or a woman who, you know, has been at home, you get to a point in your life where you say, you know what? My entire life has been about giving and doing for others. Now it's my turn. And for me, that was the light bulb moment. And it started with curiosity, which is why I called it the wellness experiment, because can be failed. Experiments cannot be. It's all about learning and making observations. Only the subject matter was me. And now the subject matter is you or whoever signs up. And I asked myself just a simple question. What would it take and what would it feel like for me to be the most fit, the healthiest I've ever been in my life? And so I doubled down on fitness, nutrition, wellness practices, in a science-backed way. I partnered with a professional trainer, Corey Rowe, who made me feel like the entire lifetime of physical activity and exercise I had been doing had been completely missing the mark, because it had been. And as I started sharing this on my Instagram, really because I had nothing else to do at this point, I wasn't on the air every
day. Yeah.
Literally, people started asking me to recreate it for them. And when we launched it, without a single dollar of marketing, Lauren, we had over 12,000 women, anywhere ranging in age from 40 to 80, sign up. It's $1 a day, which I was rigid about. I wanted everyone to say, you know what, for 99 cents a day for myself, I have that and it's worth it. I gave them the recipes. I designed the nutritional plan with my background in nutrition. I do a deep dive into the wellness science. And Corey Rowe provides these daily, unbelievable workouts, which are impactful for any level, literally the beginner to the fitness enthusiast. And it just exploded. And it's been incredible.
It's exciting. And I am going to get to some of the specifics of what you're doing. But one of the things I want to ask you first is, what got my attention when I got on your website and started looking around was two things. One is that this was not just focusing on midlife women or young women, but you are including women who are in their 60s, 70s, 80s. You know, there's no expiration to be part of your program. And so did that just happen, or was that a conscious decision?
You know, it was a little of both. And, you know, we talked about my free weekly newsletter. The the average reader of my weekly newsletter is actually a woman like above 55. It actually skews like a significant percentage are in their 60s, a significant percentage are in their 70s, and then I have 50s, 40s, and you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, as you know, in medicine and science, unless you ask a question, you don't know the answer. And right. So studied who was subscribing to my newsletter, who was following me on Instagram, and then who signed up for the wellness experiment. And I will tell you that, and I might actually get choked up when I say this, but as a doctor who's taken care of a lot of patients, you're going to really understand this. I've been really, really fortunate as a doctor to be, you know, be able to remember and know the five or six patients' lives that I personally saved.
Yeah.
Luckily in OBGYN, most of our patients are healthy, right? So as you probably can
one
agree.
One of the reasons I went into it, I don't like
that's
death.
That's right.
Same, I don't do well same. With death. Yeah.
Same with me. So that's why I know who those five or six patients are, yeah. Right? When I started this experiment and launched it, you know, for anyone to join, never in my life did I expect the response and the impact that it would have, to the point where it literally brings tears to my eyes, because every single day, one of the women in the program posts a comment on the internal community platform that says, "You changed my life. My cholesterol dropped 40 points. Wow. My blood pressure is down 10 points. My cardiologist took me off my blood pressure medication. I can now run a 5K or a 10K. I can sit on the floor with my grandchildren. I've lost 34 pounds." It brings tears to my eyes. Yeah. Because one thing for us to say we saved the life of someone who was right in front of us, right. It's another thing for me to hear that I've changed the life or medically saved the life of someone who is on the other side of the country. And it has been an unbelievable experience.
And you know, I got to tell you, there's nothing like it. And to my earlier point about you can give your 1 minute soundbite and maybe alert someone that, you know, there's something they should know about their health. It's not the same as having that kind of direct impact. I mean, that's huge.
Totally.
The other thing I wanted to ask you is, you know, right now in social media, there's a lot of misinformation and a lot of emphasis on longevity and what you should do to, you know, keep people alive longer. But unless I missed it when I was scrolling around on your website, the phrase longevity isn't really there. It's wellness. So could you please talk about the difference between wellness and longevity?
Yeah. And you're so brilliant. This is why you, Lauren, are so brilliant, because you not only notice what's there, you notice what's not there. And that is very intentional. And I'll tell you, I'm so glad you're asking this question. I think longevity is almost an adjacent scam word.
You and me both, yeah.
Right? In the medical and wellness space. And I'm against it conceptually and philosophically and literally. And I'll just quickly walk through those for your listeners, because I think this is really important. First of all, and this harkens back to what we were saying about it being a privilege to age or a privilege to go into menopause. Longevity, by definition, is about living a long time. It says nothing about the quality of that life, and it says nothing about the health span, how many years of that life you're really, you know, in vibrant, good shape. And we know in this country that on average, an American spends the last 10 years of her or his life in poor health, right? So what difference does it make if we live to 95 or 100, if the last 10 years or more are not good years? And I think that when you see like the marketing term like longevity, it lulls people for their dollars and their buy-in and their time and energy and hope into this false sense that whatever you're doing is going to get you to 90, 95, or 100. And A, we don't know that that's true, because I could be doing all those things and cross the street in Manhattan and get hit by a bus tomorrow, right?
Right.
Or B, a lot of them are unproven, as you know, because you always do a deep dive into the data, as do I. And I just, you know, I'm all for trying these things if there's no harm, but let's show me the data that's out a decade, 2 decades, 3 decades. We just don't have it yet because some of these approaches are so new. And I think that philosophically, I'm against that term longevity, because it takes the focus from the here and now and the present into the future. And what I really care about is how do women and people feel today? Because in my medical opinion and nutritional opinion, if you take care of today, tomorrow will take care of itself.
I love that. All right. So let's get specific and talk about the here and now and how to maximize wellness. And what I really want to focus on is the woman who's over the age of 60, because I really feel like that's the forgotten group. Everyone is so focused right now on perimenopause and 40s and 50s. And I hear all the time from women that say, what about me? I'm in my 60s, because you and I think would absolutely agree that it is not too late to start a wellness journey. In fact, that's the perfect time to start a wellness journey. And and before I get going with these questions, I just want to add that, you know, you're pretty impressive aside from your media background. I mean, in addition to your MD, you're board in obesity medicine, you have a master's degree in nutrition, and that's no small thing, given that, let's face it, at least when we went to medical school, and I doubt it's changed much, most doctors are given next to no education in either nutrition or obesity medicine, even though, quite frankly, those two things have a bigger impact on our wellness than pretty much anything else we do. So let me ask you this question to start with. What do most doctors get wrong about nutrition?
Most
How long do we have, right? Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Wrong.
First of all, you know, and I give them the benefit of the doubt, as I know you do too. It's not that they don't want to know about nutrition. It's that A, they learn zero in medical school or residency. And B, the level of sophistication of the field of nutritional science today is not what medical science is. That's just a fact, right? The 95 or more percent of studies in the field of nutrition science are done based on, guess what, methodology. Mm-hmm. Okay. Could you imagine if in the field of cardiology, they did published like studies, big, massive clinical trials based on questionnaires, like asking patients to just circle a bubble? No.
No.
That it never happened, right? So, those are the two reasons. And by the way, and this is very important for people to know, the biggest names right now in the United States in wellness, and I'm using air quotes for, you know, because we can see each other, but if people can probably tell, wellness, do not have credentials in the field of nutrition.
I know. And that's why I mentioned your credentials, because it's important. It matters.
Of course it matters. Now, if we were in the middle of, I don't know, a country like Siberia, where there was no other professional for thousands of miles, then you could say, you know what, I'm going to research this online and I'm going to try to explain this to a layperson. But we're not in that situation. Okay. We are in a situation where credentials matter. And I just think that, you know, there's a reason these fields exist. You and I have to learn the whole body in medical school, but we're not neurologists, right? So if someone had a problem with their brain, why would they come to us when they could go to a board certified neurologist? And I can't emphasize it enough, Lauren, the fact that so many people with significant platforms, which comes with the responsibility to have authenticity and integrity, do not have formal credentials in nutrition, and they are talking about food and diet every single day, absolutely makes my blood boil.
Listen,
it's just wrong.
I mean, I could substitute nutrition with menopause, with a million other topics, and it's really, really frustrating because people think if someone has an MD after their name, that they have expertise in everything. And you know, you have to know how to stay in your lane. If someone asks me a question about cardiology, I'm not going to answer that question. I'm going to say, not my world. Let me refer you to someone who knows. But because nutrition is food, everyone thinks like, well, everybody knows about food. Well, they don't. I don't.
Correct.
I know very little. I don't know if you, Annie Fenn, Dr. Annie Fenn, who I adore. If you don't know her, you should look her up. She's an OBGYN also, who, like you, went and got credentials and degrees in obesity and food science and nutrition. And she does foods that are great for the brain. And she's just terrific. And so I really find out who really knows so that I can refer to those people specifically.
Yeah.
You also use a term I've never heard before. You probably coined it. Nutritional gynecology. What's that? And how does it apply to postmenopause women?
Well, first of all, if you've never heard of it before, then you're right. I did coin it because you OBGYN. And I'll tell you the evolution of that. And I think this is going to resonate with a lot of your listeners. Over 10 years ago, which is when I got board certified in obesity medicine and got my master's in nutrition from Columbia, I had one of those light bulb moments while in my medical office. This had nothing really to do with television or media. I was seeing patient after patient with a variety of gynecologic issues like polycystic ovarian syndrome, PCOS, postpartum anything, weight gain, perimenopausal symptoms or transition, postmenopausal, you name it, that's what we would see every single day, right? That's the spectrum. That's right. What's about the field of OBGYN. And I made this observation that every single one of the major reproductive stages in a woman's life, coincidentally, they all start with P's, puberty, pregnancy, perimenopause, and then you throw in PCOS in there, is associated with significant metabolic and weight changes.
Can you just change that to is significantly associated with pounds? Because I want to stay in the P thing.
Let's stay. Yes, pounds.
Pounds. Exactly. Pounds with PMS. Pounds with perimenopause.
That's right. Exactly. I love it. So I thought, okay, that's the observation. Let's do a deeper dive. What are the commonalities? What's different between those? You know, obviously they are significant because they signify major hormonal changes, right, which include testosterone, which obviously include estrogen and progesterone, but they also represent changes kind of in an evolutionary standpoint into what stage a woman is getting ready for, right? Mm-hmm. So puberty is getting ready for something. Pregnancy is getting ready for something. Perimenopause is getting ready for something. And then when you put PCOS in there, which can affect any of those and all of those ages, I thought there's something here. Mm-hmm. And what was happening in my practice, in New Jersey, which I subsequently actually just closed recently, because I'm now in three different states all the time, is I was seeing these women and I was referring them to a nutritionist. And it's actually what led me to go back to school and do a three-year master's in nutrition program, is that when I sent my patients to a nutritionist, I realized there was a gap between OBGYN and nutrition. The nutritionist didn't know the reproductive endocrinology, and I didn't know the nutrition. And so I said, this has to stop. This is crazy. One hand has to talk to the other. I wanted that Venn diagram that overlapped in the sweet spot of helping women with all these stages in life. And I thought, what is this really describing? It's describing nutritional gynecology. How does the way we eat affect PCOS, perimenopause, pregnancy, and puberty? And as you know, there's a connection there.
there's a huge connection. And it's also kind of jumps out at me that when you talk to someone who's in the mental health world, those are also the, what we call the, you know, the periods of vulnerability in the mental health world, when someone is at increased risk for depression, depressive symptoms, anxiety, and all of that. So I think it does all tie together, and we tend to get into our silos, which is why it's, I think, great that we're having this conversation. All right. The other thing I want to ask you, I wanted to ask you about superfoods, because you talk about superfoods. And of course, when I hear superfoods, I'm thinking super good, like, you know, warm chocolate chip cookies and grilled cheese. But that's probably not what you mean by superfoods. So,
right. I mean, listen, that's it's a term that, you know, I kind of have a love-hate relationship with it. Superfood, I think, can be used as a marketing kind of semi pseudo scam term if used the wrong way. But if used kind of colloquially amongst people who have a similar understanding on what we're talking about and referencing, I actually think it could be accurate. And what I mean by that is to truly see the foods and beverages that we consume as our medicine. You know, that term food as medicine is very meaningful to me, because when I eat something, I subconsciously now across my mental ticker literally say to myself, what is this doing for me? Sure, I like the taste of blueberries, but what is it doing for me? Yeah. And so when I eat for blueberries, I think these are powerful antioxidants, they're fiber, they're low calorie. Like, and that's kind of my, it's my dialogue with myself. When I reach for dark chocolate, I think these polyphenols, antioxidants, you know, I kind of go through all the data and the interesting articles, the good news that I've read about dark chocolate in moderation. You know, that's what I mean by superfoods. And listen, what's exciting in the world, I just introduced myself to a new superfood. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. Sea buckhorn. Have you
heard?
Okay.
It doesn't sound delicious, but go. Tell me about it.
Yeah. So it's a bright orange fruit, sea buckthorn. I think there's a T in there. I just came across it in the last couple of weeks when I was in Los Angeles. I'm going to be doing a newsletter article about it. And it's really, really high in antioxidants. You have, you know, you don't eat it like blueberries, but usually it's in a juice form and you have a couple of teaspoons of it. And I think when you're on the lookout for these so-called superfoods, sometimes you can find, you know, some really interesting things from a culinary and nutritional standpoint.
That is interesting. All right. One last question about nutrition before we move on to exercise. And I'm going to kind of go back to the nutritional gynecology thing. So postmenopause women, if you were to talk to a woman who is postmenopause, not perimenopause, her estrogen tank is absolutely on empty. She hasn't had a period in 5 years. She's, you know, approaching 60. What would you tell her as far as nutritional gynecology in that stage of life? And if you want to put some superfoods in there, you know.
Yeah. Listen, I would say it takes a different strategic approach than it did before the age of 50. It's when fiber and protein need to be the heroes of your eating habits always. And by the way, that primes the pump literally for 70s, 80s, and 90s when, as you know, GI transit time, the time it takes for food to go from one end of our gastrointestinal tract to the other, normally slows down with age, partially also hormonal effect. And so you want to guard against that. You don't want to deal with constipation. You want to maximize the gut microbiome, the estrobilome, which is the species and organisms in our GI tract that literally have an impact on the levels of our estrogen systemically. And the way to do that is to eat as clean foods as possible that are high in fiber, shooting for at the baseline 25 grams of fiber a day, if not 30, because, you know, we're a little overachievers. So
of course,
30 is better than 25. Making sure that you're meeting your protein target goals and minimizing alcohol. And, you know, that's other than I believe that eating should not actually be like, you shouldn't have a fork in one hand and a calculator in another hand. It should be easy. It should be pleasurable. You know, and I think that as long as someone has a system with that strategy, 60 and over can be a good time.
Yeah. And I think we're all talking about the minimizing alcohol exposure. And in fact, I just about last month did a Substack post on it. And it's something that we're all embracing, not just for, you know, the somewhat obvious reasons and decreasing cancer, but just you feel better. You feel better.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you brought up the gut microbiome, because there is so much emerging research on what we can learn from our gut microbiome for really everything that's happening in our bodies. So, all right, let's move on to exercise with the time we have left. And you know, there's basically two groups. There's the people who have been active and exercised their whole life, and maybe they need to make some changes. And then there's the women who've not worn a pair of gym shoes since high school. So
where are you in that?
I actually have never stopped moving. And I was wanted to be a ballerina and spent most of my life going to ballet class, including through medical school. I am standing on my treadmill desk right now. I work on a treadmill desk, and I generally walk about 5 to 6 miles a day, especially if it's a writing day. I don't have it on now because it would make you dizzy, but I am constantly moving and have very much changed what I do throughout my life. So I'm in that first group.
Amazing.
But so talk about, okay, let's start with that first group. Someone who has really been pretty active, what do they need to change about their exercise routine, or do they need to change it as they age?
They definitely do need to change it. And this is where I've learned so much from partnering with professional trainer Corey Rowe, because, by the way, just to give your listeners a visual, he's a 35-year-old Jamaican former model.
I saw his picture. It's worth going to your website just to see what he looks like.
It certainly is.
And
so I say, when I tell people about us and how we teamed up to provide nutritional program, wellness, science, and then a fitness program, that we're like the younger, healthier version of Martha Stewart and Snoop.
Yeah, I love it.
I got it. I totally got it. So what women need to do, after what age did you say?
Let's say starting 55, 60.
55.
Because that's the group that people are ignoring.
Yeah. What they need to do, and this also drives me crazy, because when you look at social media today and you look at what's, you know, very popular, there are a lot of very smart, very well-credentialed experts who, because they're not, they might be smart in their field, but they're not expert communicators. They miss the mark on filling out the whole communication and the whole message with fitness and women over 55. And they drill down and hammer down on one thing. Like right now, it's like, women should lift heavy. Women should lift heavy. Women should lift heavy. Or, you know, for a while it was the weighted vest and walking and the weighted vest and walking. And here's the secret that no one says. You need all of it. You don't just need heavy weights, you need high reps. You need mobility, you need balance, you need flexibility, you need the walking with the weighted vest, and you need the sprint interval cardio, and you need the yoga and swimming. You need everything. And the reason why most influencers and experts won't say that is because it's not catchy or buzzy or trending on the social media algorithm. And they feel that it dilutes their niche expertise, which I disagree. I think it is very clear that the human body is a very smart machine that rapidly adjusts to anything you show it or give it or feed it or have it do on a regular basis. So how many patients did you and I have who were runners? They were like marathon runners or half marathon.
All they did.
Right. And they were like, oh, I'm in great shape. I run 5 days a week. And I'll look at them. And as they get older and we have age-related sarcopenia, which is the loss of muscle mass and function. I know you talk about this a lot. What is a runner? They might not have a weight problem, but they have a muscle problem.
Right.
And have a bone density problem.
And knee problems, joint problems.
Right. So
repetitive motion, yeah.
I'm never going to tell anyone, and I know you won't either, to stop running. But you know what I'll also say? You need to do some long walks with a weighted vest and add some positive stress on your frame. You need to lift weights and gradually go up to heavy weights. You know, you need to do other types.
You need to stretch, and you need to work. You mentioned balance. Balance is so important as people age, because people don't get in trouble from osteoporosis. They get trouble from osteoporosis when they fall and break their bone.
That's right. And I'm going to tell you and your listeners something that I've been focusing on in the last 4 months or so that I think is really cutting edge, even though it's not quote unquote new. It's barefoot training or walking with outside sneakers that are have minimal support. Yeah. And that is because, and you reminded me of it when you said, you know, an osteoporotic fracture that results from a fall, right? We spend our days now almost entirely in shoes that have so much structure and support. They take all the proprioceptive stimulation out of the equation. So we were meant to be able to put our bare feet on the ground and send signals to our brain about what's the level of terrain like? What does our balance need to be like? All those stabilizing muscles in our foot, our ankle, our lower leg that goes all the way up our body, by the way. And when we spend our life in shoes all day,
yeah,
you wonder why our balance deteriorates when we fall.
You know, I never thought about that. And that's such a good point. And yoga, of course, one of the benefits of yoga is that it is in your bare feet. And even in my lifetime of ballet, you're wearing soft ballet shoes.
That's
and you're
right.
doing the most difficult balances, essentially the equivalent of bare feet. And I never really thought about that, but it's
and
interesting.
So as we age, our proprioceptive abilities tend to deteriorate. And those muscles in our foot, ankle, lower leg, those stabilizing muscles, forget it. They are shot. They've never been shown any love. And so for the last 4 to 6 months with Corey Rowe, we've worked a lot of barefoot training or using those, you know, certain shoes that you can find anywhere that have minimal support into, you know, I'll go for a walk and wear them for an hour. Or when I go run errands, I'll wear them for an hour. And they've really made a huge difference. And so I think that's just one example. Like as we age as women, we need unilateral training. We need barefoot training. We need balance and flexibility work. We need high intensity interval cardio. It doesn't matter if you're strong and you can lift heavy weights if your cardiovascular fitness is in the crapper. And so I think it's exciting because it's literally like put your fitness routines on a lazy Susan and spin it around and say, you know, today I'm going to work on swimming, or today I'm going to work on balance and posture, or tomorrow, because it's all important.
It's all important. And I was talking to someone else a few months ago and we were talking about snacking as far as, you know, you don't have to go to the gym for an hour and a half and do this whole program. You can, while your coffee is brewing, you can lean against the counter and do some counter push-ups and in your bare feet, you know, go up and down and just balance for a little bit. And you just kind of make that almost a game throughout the day of what can I do now?
Do this one, brush your teeth on one leg, get into a tree yoga pose and try to balance on one leg in the morning when you're brushing your teeth, and then at night, balance on the other leg. And if
so I do a variation of that. When I brush my teeth, I do 50 squats because I figure that's how long I should be brushing my teeth. So I do my squats when I brush my teeth. And then when I wash my face, I'm barefoot, I go up on relevé from, you know, all my dance and stuff, and I go up and I stay up there while I'm washing my face, and then go down.
Amazing.
And same thing. But now I'm going to try the one-legged thing because I haven't done that.
Pre-pose, you know, if for any yogi. And then if you really want to give your brain a workout when you're brushing your teeth, switch to your non-dominant hand.
Oh, no. That's just too much.
Your dentist will thank you. They'll be like, oh, like less gum erosion. All of a sudden.
My husband already makes fun of me for everything I'm doing when I'm getting ready for bed. And he's going to take one look at that and say, oh gosh, you know, forget it.
Yeah, it's like science experiment in my house too. Trust me.
Yeah. All right. So we've talked about the woman who's kind of been at some level exercising her whole life. But then there are these women, and we do come across them, who now they're 60, maybe they've been told they have low bone mass, they're at risk for osteoporosis. Maybe they're just realizing, oh my God, I get a start moving. What do you tell them? Where do they start?
They literally start on day one, you know, and I'll tell you one of the most amazing things in the wellness experiment. And, you know, you mentioned at the beginning, we have women in their 40s to 82. And we have women who have been active like you their entire life and like me their entire life. And then we have women who literally have never done anything. And the beautiful thing about exercise and fitness is that your body will respond so quickly in such miraculous ways that I actually get excited when there's something I can't do, because to me, again, hence the name, it's like a real life living science experiment. I take something that I cannot do on Monday, and 2 weeks from Monday, I'm going to be able to do it in some way that's dramatically different and better than on day zero when I couldn't do it, because that's how incredible the human body is. We've seen it as surgeons when we operate on patients, we in effect take them back to day zero, right? Yeah. And they have to get them back to their pre-operative baseline or better. And that's why I went into a surgical specialty in part. I loved watching that day in and day out and being a part of it. But exercise works the same way. And I think what most women don't know who have never really done any exercise is, newsflash, it's supposed to be hard. It's actually supposed to be hard. When it's hard, you know it's working. When you're sore the next day, or actually 2 days later, when actually the peak muscle soreness kicks in, you know you've done your body well. You've given it a gift because you challenged it. And it will talk to you and tell you, oh, I'm sore. You showed me muscles that you weren't using so long. And that's the gift you're giving your body by doing something that's hard. So it should be hard. It should be done with intensity. And it's never too late. It's never too late to build strength, flexibility, cardiovascular endurance. It's all a miracle of the human body.
And that's so true. It is never too late. I was scrolling and I came across this quote from Dick Van Dyke about exercise. I don't know if you've seen it. He said, at 30, I used to exercise to look good. At the age of 50, to be fit. At 70, to not be padded in a bed. And at 80, to be able to live without assistance. And now at 99, I do it out of pure defiance. I love that. I love that. All right. Gosh, we've covered a lot. And, you know, I don't want it to seem overwhelming, and it's not, because I think you've given us a lot of simple, you know, do it now takeaways for people to just make some simple changes that'll turn into big changes. But what didn't I ask you? What else do you want women to know?
You know, I think what you didn't ask, and we, again, if you and I were having coffee or dinner, this would come up probably in the first 10 minutes. I know it would, is that I think that I want women to know that as great as it is that there is this, you know, growing dialogue and awareness about menopause in general, women's health in general, I would caution women to look carefully and listen carefully to what sometimes is a not so great message in those narratives. And that not so great message, in my opinion, gets very close to victimizing women and actually kind of being insulting to women, because it suggests that women are so meek and passive that if things aren't served up to us on a silver platter and tied up in a bow, and, you know, we're not handheld through these major life changes, that we're going to be lost at sea and, you know, flailing. And I just don't buy that. I really don't. You know, no one told me how to be a pregnant woman until I was pregnant with my first child. And guess what? I educated myself real fast. I was not an OBGYN yet when I had my children. And I learned, you know, I took the initiative and learned. Same thing with puberty, right? How great was anyone's sex ed class when middle school? Horrible. And somehow we figured it out when we got our first period. There was no class on how to use a tampon, right? We figured it out. And I think menopause is the same thing. And I would caution women, and the men who listen, because men are part of this discussion too, to be very careful when you say or when you hear a narrative that suggests we've been put in the corner. Now, there's obviously some truth to, has women's research been underfunded? Yes. Has there been a lot of paternalism in medicine and science that has to do with women not only being studied as the subject matter, but advancing as the scientists? Yes, of course. But listen to the narrative, right, Lauren? The narrative is, oh, no one told us about this and no one prepared us for this and no one, and I think that we have to be careful with that because we women are just not that passive, yeah. Not that meek. We're not that powerless. And I think that we should take this time, which is for what it is, which is exciting and good and better late than never that we're talking about this, but be very careful about the tone that accompanies a lot of these discussions, because I actually think it runs the risk of setting women back instead of advance.
No, I couldn't agree more. And we see the same thing even with doctors. I mean, let's face it, you know, we have doctors. I'm tired of people saying, well, we didn't learn about menopause during my medical school or residency. Well, neither did I. I learned about it later. And even if you did, it's all outdated anyway. So this excuse of, well, I don't know anything about it because they didn't teach it in medical school is just silly, you know? So
perfect analogy. That's the exact same thing, you know, to say that, like I said, there's a lot of big experts who are very smart, have big platforms, and they readily admit, oh, doctors don't know anything about nutrition because we're not taught about it. Well, then do what I did. Go back.
Learn. Either learn or refer. Say, this, I don't know any of this stuff, so I'm going to refer you to someone who does instead of just spouting information that's not correct.
Totally.
All right. This, we could go on for hours and we'll have to do this again, but this has been great fun. Thank you so much for the work that you do and the difference that you make in so many women's lives. And I would encourage everyone to check out your experiment. Where can they find you? Where can they find your information?
Instagram is probably the easiest, at DRJ Ashton. And the website, if they'd rather do it on a laptop, is joinagenda.com. And agenda is like J-E-N, like Jennifer. But I have to thank you, Lauren, because you've been such an incredible voice, calm, science-based, you know, very, very powerful for so long.
I'm glad you think I'm calm. A lot of people who know me really well would say, oh my God, would you calm down?
When you get heated up, there's a reason. So
you know what, though? It's interesting. And I don't know if and just last thing, you know, one of the things about being a surgeon, and we're both surgeons, is what people don't appreciate is if you are a surgeon that can't keep calm, you're in trouble because there's nothing that makes it worse if things are not going well than a surgeon who starts screaming and yelling at people. And my medical students would always tell me, we would know when things were not going like you wanted them to go, the quieter you got and the calmer you got, because you would just get so focused and start to say in this like very calm voice, maybe you should put a clamp on that bleeder, you know, instead of like screaming, oh my God, there's blood everywhere. You know,
say what people would start to freak out. And I would say, listen, this is not, it's not time to freak out yet. When you see me freaking out, then you can freak out. And
exactly.
I said, that I was never going to get to that point.
No, that's like I have the fear of flying, which is a whole other story. But the first thing I do is I look at the flight attendants because I figure if they don't look scared, then I shouldn't be scared.
Exactly.
So well, there's that. And with that, we'll end before we get into our weaknesses and phobias.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.